T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Oh, it's WTIC, it's Friday, and producer Mike plays this song on Fridays to get us energized. Us old men, get us off our seats and dancing. Michael Harrison, are you rocking?
Oh, yes, I'm rocking away. It's so happy.
So this song plays every Friday, is that true?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
I didn't either until Mikey told me yesterday, but it's got a certain magic to it. I love it.
It's one of my favorite songs of all time. I whistle it around the house.
Stop it. You're mocking us now, and I don't appreciate it.
See, I got it.
Yeah. You are so musical.
I am.
So,
music is my life.
There was a debate last night. Did you hear?
Why can't people get along? Debates. Why is everybody fighting? What was it about?
What's
who?
Up?
Where?
It,
I was watching
wrestling.
It was
a beautiful thing. 75-ish-year-old men trying to kill each other with words.
I know. Isn't it amazing?
On national TV. It is. It is an amazing thing.
I like the way Biden calls Trump man. Hey, man. Come on, man. Shut up,
come
man.
On.
And,
come on. Come on. He likes one-word answers.
Yeah. And Trump calls him Joe. It sounds funny when he says Joe. You know, hey, Joe. Hey, man, how you doing, man? How's the presidency? You know something? It was compared to the last fiasco, it was actually not bad.
No, it was a very tame evening compared to the first debate.
I mean, I don't know how much truth was said. Yeah, it's like dueling accusations. You're a cheating, slimy criminal. No, you are. What about this? No, well, what about that?
That's it. That's it in a nutshell.
Am I right?
Yeah, it was just a punching match.
Oh, gosh. You know, and in some ways, you sit there, you say, is this what it's about? You know, they're all... They are all, we are all, everybody is all full of skeletons in the closet. You know, we found an email on a hard drive that fell into a bathtub that was procured from a fix-it shop in Hamburg, Germany. I don't know. You know, we got a ticket to a cleaner that your dirty suit was, you know, it's like, what is this?
But if you think about how people get jobs or positions in life, it isn't usually from some thoughtful process. So it is easy to look at this and say, isn't it ridiculous? This is the contest to be the leader of some large portion of the world, to be the most powerful person politically on the planet, and to, in terms of physical force, to have oversight and control over the most powerful military in the history of mankind. And the job interview comes down to, so how tall are you? How much do you weigh? All right, you'll do.
Yeah, are you able to string 3 words together?
Yeah.
You know, are you capable of doing daily household chores? You know, it... So I don't know, but do you think...
Right. You're not a smoker, are you?
Do you think it moved the needle? In all seriousness, do you think that that debate will have had an impact on enough undecided voters to, you know, have influence over the course of this election and how it's going to result?
Well, that's a loaded question. The I think if you could take it out of the narrative of this election, if it were just an isolated event, two guys nobody knew, and you showed it to everybody and said, who won this debate? I think they would say Trump did. He was more commanding. He was in control and more authoritative. And if you put it in the context of this election with the arc that we're in right now, where Trump blew the first debate and lost what I think was his best opportunity to take control of the election and instead pushed it away from him. This pulled it back a tiny bit, maybe, but I don't think it can change the ultimate arc of the election.
Mm. Everybody that I've spoken to, and I'm a chronic researcher, I'm a chronic pollster. Everybody that likes Trump thought he won, and everybody that likes Biden thought he won. And when I say likes, I mean like as in like me on Facebook. I don't mean loves. I just mean, you know, people that are at this point rooting for or hoping for or voting for, even if they're, as the saying goes, holding their nose.
So they're going in the direction they're leaning in terms of their response.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. People see what they want to see because they had very different takes on policy. You know, a debate is supposed to be, let me prove to the audience why my ideas are better than yours and why yours are not as good as mine, or why I'm more capable of handling this. But even deeper than I'm more capable, it's really an argument of arguments. And this was this didn't happen. This was threats. This was mudslinging, attacks, and denials. That's not true. That's not true.
Shaking the head with a sarcastic smile.
Yeah, well, they both
learned
one of the
greatest
response. Techniques. One of the greatest television techniques is use your face and your body language to say more than your mouth could say. And, you know, I figured that out a long time ago. You know, I've done a lot of talking heads positions on some of these cable network shows. And I figured out the way to get the producer, the director, to have the camera go to you if you're not talking. It's just roll your eyes, smile, you know, shake
trick,
your
huh?
head like, oh,
you provide
gosh.
Some action.
They can't resist putting you on the screen.
That's great.
Of course, you know, every time I've ever been on television, I say, how'd you like it? They say, you look great. Or why'd you wear that tie? Or why didn't you wear a tie? Well, how'd you like what I said? I didn't know what you said, but you look good. Television is so superficial, and most of the discussion about this debate is on that level. Hey, Trump was cool. You know, he was commanding. He was presidential. Biden won by not losing. Biden is not senile.
Well, that was probably the most important thing. I mean, if you were briefing Joe Biden for last night's debate, you'd say, look, just don't have a Rick Perry moment, and you'll be fine. And that was really his job last night. Was to hold his own and appear not to have lost his marbles due to his advanced years, because people think. Somebody called me today and said, oh, Joe Biden, I saw in his eyes what I saw in my mother's eyes when she was, or grandmother's eyes, I forget what he said, when she had Alzheimer's. You know, that kind of glazed eye look. He said he swore he saw the glazed eye look in Joe Biden's eyes last night.
What a great diagnosis.
He's not an MD, I don't think, either.
You know, what if the guy had a couple of swigs from the old fruit jar? You know? The glazed look, my friend, has many potential causes. Not just
but the question remains,
excuse me.
As much fun as we can make of this process of ours for picking a leader, is there a better process that we have seen?
The better process would be for each and every one of us to be more serious and demanding of content, quality, process, you know, answers, questions, knowledge. the game is played the way the game is scored, and it's played to the audience. I think I'm a great believer that a democracy, to be successful, has to have a really educated and very, very astute, discerning public. If you have people that are bowled over by personality and by the shallow stuff that we talk about and accept lies and all the things that go on, well, then, you know, you get what you pay for. You get the kind of democracy you deserve.
But isn't that baked into the human? Isn't that how humans work? We use visceral sense of whether somebody is a threat or a friend.
Mm-hmm.
And we judge people based on these instinctual responses. And what else are we going to do? And if democracy, if having an election form of government is about masses of people who aren't paying attention making a decision, it's going to be an instinctive decision. How else is it going to play out? That's built into the system. That's why I ask if there's a better one, because I'm wondering if maybe the idea of elective politics, while it does protect you from having the king hand the crown over to his son, it also comes with its own problems in terms of the type of con that is engaged in order to win the position.
Mm-hmm. That's why populism as a form of political style and ideology has diminishing returns. You know, you think of populism, the people. I'm a man of the people. You know, I listen to the people. Sometimes that's the lowest common denominator, and the founding fathers were very concerned about that. As a matter of fact, that's one of the reasons why there's the electoral college system. Mm. The irony, and this is aimed toward people who do not like Donald Trump, okay? It's not my own opinion. It's just the stereotype that Trump is bad, you know, orange man bad. The electoral college was designed to protect the country from having a president like Trump. And when I say like Trump, I mean like the bad Trump. There's two Trumps. There's the bad Trump and there's the good Trump. The people that like Trump will tell you why he's a great president. The people that do not like Trump will make a hell of a case for why he's terrible. So the terrible Trump was elected primarily because of the Electoral College, which was originally designed to protect us from a charismatic, demagogue-like man of the people who tells the people what they want to hear and captures their fancy. And yet it doesn't work that way anymore. That's based on the assumption if you don't like Trump, which a lot of people, you have to admit, a lot of people do not like Trump.
I don't think that's true.
You don't?
No. How can you not just love him?
Well, I love him for many reasons. I just find it interesting that he's president.
No, there is something uncanny about him, though. I find him endearing, even in some of his worst moments. He's such a human being. Michael Harrison is here. We'll talk more. I want to talk more about this constitutional stuff, too. But I like that you brought up the Electoral College. I love the Electoral College and think we have to cling to it. And let's talk about that, too, when we continue on WTIC. So I like this, what you brought up, Michael Harrison, about the founders being wary of a democratic system, that is, of the people being right, whatever they decided, because the people come generally from a position of ignorance in terms of knowing what's going on inside of government, especially since everybody who's inside government refuses to tell the truth about what they're up to. So mm-hmm. We're in the dark, and the idea of us in the dark, while people run cons by us, when they run these narratives that have nothing to do with reality to throw us off the scent. So the founders wisely wanted to make sure there was an intermediary body, especially since there wasn't national media back then. And, you know, there might be somebody who was big in one state and unknown in another state, and they wanted to protect against maybe that kind of populism, too, where there's just this, you know, like a TV host who could win just because he was famous.
Right. Well, what it came down to is that throughout history, it has been believed that the public, the serfs, the everyday people don't have enough education and don't have enough worldliness and sophistication to be able to really be able to self-govern. And that's why there was an aristocracy and a ruling class. And to this day, there are countries that believe it's an inefficient way to run things. I mean, if we were in China right now, run by one of the most dangerous organizations in the world today, the Chinese Communist Party, and you're to listen to, you know, what the people grow up with and are sort of indoctrinated with there, they point to Western democracy as being a completely inefficient system. They point to how organized they are and how they operate with one mind, and they're able to build cities overnight. They're able to have all kinds of wonderful technological and organizational advances. I mean, there's something to be said for a totalitarian state, but at its core, it's rotten because it takes away liberty and freedom and the things that we cherish. But they don't believe that it could be done because they don't believe in the ability of the everyday people to make these kinds of decisions and not opt for, oh, you're going to have a chicken in every pot. Oh, you're going to bring me this. You're going to pay for that. You're going to, you know, things that you rail against. That's what the founding fathers were afraid of. You know, offering people pie in the sky, and they'd vote for it because, you know, money grows on trees. The average person has no idea where money comes from. They don't even know what money is. So,
well, if you look at it from the perspective, though, of having a less of a lofty sense of what voting is all about, to me, the notion of an election is simply to have an external to the process, the internal workings of government, have some external panel that is able to choose a leader without being riggable. And the people seems like a good, on the surface, on paper, if you're making a plan, that seems pretty reasonable. Let the people choose, and that way it can't be from father to son. Mm-hmm. That's the assumption. That because you're putting it into a market format. So are the people better at choosing which restaurant they want to go to at night? Yeah. Are they better at choosing which store has the best deals? I think they are. People go to Walmart because it's got the cheapest prices, right? People are best to decide that. And it's easier for the store to stock the shelves based on what sells rather than what's coming from
Then you believe in the marketplace running things, don't you?
Absolutely.
Okay, then why
don't know what else there is.
Then how could you possibly support the Electoral College?
Well, because the Electoral College is part of the marketplace. The power of the Electoral College to me is that it defends the rights of the state, which, and so the country is a market. We've got these 50 states, and ideas get tested in the 50 states, and people can populate the states that have the best.
Do you believe that the states? Do you believe the states know best how to run themselves?
I believe that government is inherently dangerous, and the smaller the units of government, the better off everybody is. So yeah, let there be 50 different systems of something in government rather than have Washington decide it all. We're all better off. Do you think there's anything we're doing that is working better if the federal government takes over all of it as opposed to having the states do it?
Oh, I think that I thought World War II was handled much better by Washington than having each state send its own, you know, army to Europe and fight. I think that
it could be.
When we put
we don't really have a control for that. But I think that's the easy go-to answer. I don't know what after the military we would prefer to have operated on a national basis.
Well, I think that Eisenhower's plan to put in a national highway system was a pretty remarkable accomplishment. And that was...
Yes, he wanted that so he could drive the rockets around and stuff. You know, that was a military operation done for the defense.
Well, unfortunately, we're a militaristic society, and so are all the others. Go to all the big national monuments. Most of them have to, they celebrate battles and military.
Yeah. But that's part of also the narrative that holds us together, because people lost their lives, and we have to celebrate the people who gave up so much to fight to defend us. But with regard to markets, I just think, yeah, anytime, even the Chinese, in order to have their great superior government to ours, realized they had to give up the idea of being anti-capitalist. They had to adopt a capitalist system which otherwise doesn't allow markets to decide things. They realized to have a successful economy, you need
markets. Don't buy into that too much, because really the Chinese capitalism is a fake capitalism. Every company that's an independent capitalistic company in China is, if you scratch the surface and follow the money, owned by the Communist Party.
And, all right, we've got to pause it right there. Hold on, Michael. We'll continue. Michael Harrison here from Talkers Magazine. More coming up after news on WTIC. WTIC. Michael Harrison is here from Talkers Magazine. Michael is the publisher of the trade journal of the talk radio industry. He is also the host of a radio program called the Michael Harrison Wrap that we carry here Saturdays at 2. You got any hot stories for that one, Michael?
Wow, hot stories. You know, that's the Michael Harrison Wrap is nothing but hot stories. It's sort of like American Top 40, you know, talk. And we go through every week the most talked about topics. And what do you think they are? Of course, the presidential.
Well, I think you must be talking about, you must be covering Hunter Biden. What do you have to say about that?
We have to say is that people are saying about it. I don't take a position on Hunter Biden. I just take the position that people on conservative talk radio are talking about Hunter Biden. And people on conservative cable television are talking about Hunter Biden. And as you
yes, but there's a larger story there that you're usually operating in an altitude that's higher than everybody else in terms of media, because you've made your life in the business. And the Hunter Biden thing, if you separate it from the partisan rancor aspect of Hunter Biden as a weapon in the wars between left and right, there's this larger thing of what social media is, this game that it's playing of not being actual media, just being a platform, but then they monitor what gets posted and get to decide whether a New York Post story is as valid as a New York Daily News story. And I don't know how they're going to reconcile this position that they're in of not being the curator of the material, but having to curate the material to make sure it doesn't cross lines.
Exactly what do you mean? Are you talking about Twitter and Facebook and the attack that they're biased?
Well, the idea that they were, whether they're biased or not, they were forced into a position where they felt they had to ban a story that came from the fourth largest newspaper in the country because they weren't sure if it was actually, according to them, their concern that it might be a repeat of what happened with Russian interference 4 years ago.
So yeah, well, we're reaching a point right now where people are not sure of what is reality. It doesn't matter how big a newspaper or how not. There are people that believe the New York Times is totally fraudulent. CNN is totally fraudulent. The New York Post, totally fraudulent. Fox News Channel, fraudulent. You talk to people outside of the conservative media bubble, and they look at it as fake news. Whereas in that bubble, they look at everything else as fake news. And, you know, the term fake news is
fake
used
news
against any medium that says something you don't want to hear. So the biggest problem we face in our society right now, whatever the reason may be, maybe it's the media, maybe it's the fractionalization thereof, maybe it's all because of talk radio, but things are so fractionalized and polarized and politicized and, you know, confrontational that some of the institutions that we used to rely on for having ethics and principles and, you know, having a high bar, we no longer respect. And as a result, we have nothing to turn to point to as a starting point for us to be able to agree. And therefore, so what if the New York Post says that Hunter Biden is crooked? You know, it's fake news. It's not real. It's seeking
victory
at the expense
of truth. Well, so what do we do about
that?
But But I'm looking for the truth behind this. I'm not looking to enter it into the fray of left-right and wondering how do we survive as a society, given that what you're saying seems to be the case. That is, there is no trusted source. If there is no fact that actually can be trusted as being factual, if our reporting, because CNN has gone through a dramatic change over the last few years, it seems to have gone from having some journalistic qualities to just being let's attack Trump all the time as a business model. And that's for good reason, I think, because they're under economic pressure. And even doing that, CNN can't get a decent sized audience. Like, what happens to us if we can't have an all news channel that's actually a news channel?
We have a real problem. We have a real problem, and that's what's happened, and we're experiencing the problem right now. We're going through a terribly difficult transition between the 20th century and the 21st century, and the rewiring of the human nervous system per the media, per communications technology, and I don't know how it's going to turn out, but right now it's not very healthy. You know, I could say maybe ignorance is bliss. Maybe if they didn't cover any of this dirt and they just talked about policy and what we didn't know doesn't hurt us, that might be better. You know, would we have been better off knowing that JFK was having an affair with Marilyn Monroe? Would we be better off if we knew that Eisenhower was messing around, that the great FDR and Eleanor Roosevelt had marital problems, that some of the great presidents and people in history were alcoholics? In many cases, were perverts. Would we be better off? I mean, how much knowledge
do we?
Excuse me.
I think some of that is appalling that everybody sat around and allowed there to be two realities, allowed there to be a total phony story that went out to the world. And I know that still goes on. But at the same time, I think it's nice for us. It's better for us to have an honest flow of information, even about the way people live. I mean, is it right that the media stood there every day covering FDR and never reported that FDR was in a wheelchair? How is that even reconcilable?
Well, the questions are more powerful than any answer I can offer, because the questions are questions that come from big minds. The answers come from little minds. So I'm going to say here, you know, well, you know, they should have told everybody. But maybe they shouldn't have. Maybe we would not have won World War II. Maybe if Churchill were revealed to be the boorish, cigar-smoking, cursing alcoholic that he was, he wouldn't have saved Western society from Hitler. Maybe too much information gets in the way of what our leaders and what our systems are supposed to provide.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that's the case. What I'm saying, these are the questions. I'd rather ask the questions than be really critical. I know the answer. I don't know the answer. Because all our principles are at odds with each other when it comes to these situations. Think about it.
It's fascinating, isn't it? No, I think about it all the time.
I know you do.
I just think it's totally fascinating. I believe in the two sides of everything. So if there is a cover story that third parties at a bottleneck of like the entrance into the news cycle is controlled by executives at three or four companies, and those guys make a decision that the public doesn't get to know certain things, and then power forms around the fulcrum of that deception. And just as there is good on the good side of that deception, there's bad on the other side of that deception. And that's where I see the problem. That's what I see us going through right now, that we've become accustomed to the idea of there being certain deceptions, and we're no longer comfortable with those deceptions because we see through social media and the power of our ability to know everything, we get to see how those people can't really be trusted. And there is a dark side to every democratic norm, as they like to call them, that's in place.
Yeah. There's a dark side to humanity. All philosophy, all religion goes back to the basics of, you know, the human being. I would have said man, but that now leaves out women. So humans are terribly complex in terms of dealing with the angel and the devil.
It goes back to religion. It goes back to everything. Within each and every one of us, it's wired in our DNA. We have a dark side, and we have an angelic side. Maybe the human species, and I hate to take, you know, an everyday political conversation and then go off the deep end with the human species.
And,
you know, but maybe we are not the crown of creation. Maybe we are halfway in our evolution from being beasts of the earth, of the jungle, of the ground, to being some type of angelic beings down the road. And we haven't gotten there. And we're torn between our higher angels, as Abraham Lincoln put it, our better angels, and the devil on that shoulder going, come on, go ahead, take the cookie from the jar. You know, it's open. You'll get away with it. Be bad. You know, we used to talk about.
You know this guy, Michael, huh? The guy who sits on your shoulder.
I know that each and every human being has within them, just as every acorn has the oak tree in it, every human being has in them the potential for unbelievably good, virtuous, high-level principles, or the lowest, scariest, meanest, cruelest possible personality. It can happen in any country. It can happen anywhere. We used to think, well, that can't happen here. You know, the Germans are different. The Japanese, they're different. It couldn't happen in America. It can happen anywhere. Anywhere. We're all humans. We're all the same as much as we are different. And that's another dichotomy that we have to deal with. How do we deal with the fact that we're so much the same and yet we are so different? We can't live without each other and we can't stand each other when we get too close. It's a very difficult thing being a human. And it's even more difficult having an organization with 350 million of them all trying to vie for their piece of the pie. And that's what running a country is like.
It's an amazing thing. And all that just happened because we talked about the Talkers Magazine list of the biggest news stories of the week. And I've got another one picked out, and it has to do with the Pope.
Oh.
The Pope making a little, swinging in the other direction on gay marriage. That was kind of a surprise.
I had a wonderful, you know, I filled in for Pastor Will this week. I think on Thursday, yesterday. Yesterday seems like
way
a year
back
ago.
Then.
And I got a call from a lovely woman who was frustrated about the way Trump is being treated. And her main issue was Roe v. Wade. She's against the choice. You know, she's against abortion. And we had a lovely, caring person. And then she mentioned she's a Catholic. And I said, well, I can't let you go without touching upon, you know, the seventh most talked about story in America. The Pope supports gay marriage. How do you feel about it? You're a Catholic. And she, oh, you had to ask me that. I'm torn up about it. I don't know. You know, I said, so you're against gay marriage? I am. Well, how do you deal with it? Well, and she couldn't answer it, of course. And I detected her conflict, and the conflict was enough for me. It's you don't have to answer it. What you've answered is that you're conflicted about it. Being conflicted is a very human thing that we sometimes just have to accept. We're conflicted.
Mm. Complicated subjects. Let's take a quick break. We'll continue our conversation with Michael Harrison from Talkers Magazine. Stay with us on WTIC. I'm sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All one is the truth. Just give me some truth. Good afternoon. Michael Harrison is here from Talkers Magazine for our normal Friday get-together. So Rush Limbaugh made a big announcement this week about his health. Things seem not to be going that well. He's not optimistic about his outcomes. Do you have any inside info on this from the magazine?
Well, it was the 10th most talked about story on talk radio this past week. It got a tremendous amount of attention. Michael Savage, the talk show host that you've heard of, sent out a tweet saying, come on, Rush, that was the most terrible piece of radio I've ever heard, crying about your cancer on the air.
I promise when I'm out of here, I'm not bringing my listeners down. And I wrote something saying that Michael Savage got it wrong. And it was amazing how many people came to Limbaugh's defense. Limbaugh's loved in this business. He's loved in this business, even by people who don't agree with him politically. He's loved for all that he's done for the radio industry and all he's done for talk radio, and still does. He's brave. He works without hearing. He can't hear. He's overcome drug addiction. He's overcome scandal that's embarrassing. He loves what he does. He's totally sincere about this. And he's fighting a hell of a battle, but it's real. He's very ill, and he's too young, and it's very sad. What can I say? It upsets me.
It's very interesting what Savage did, attacking him for talking on the air about his illness. And if Savage was just being sincere, that he thought that was bad radio, it shows such a misunderstanding of the nature of the connection that an audience can have with a great host. And the idea that, yeah, you can have rules of what's good radio and what's bad radio, but that goes out the window when you're talking about the relationship between the audience and the host and something meaningful.
I'm old school. I believe that it's all comes down to the relationship between the person on the air and the people listening. I just think it's really important. I know what it is that motivated me to become involved in radio as a kid and a young person. And to me, you know, if it's just audio, then it's a public utility. No, the idea of somebody who's talking into your ear and telling you how they feel and talking about their lives and trying to parse the words and find the truth and, you know, whether you agree with them or not, you just get to know them. And it becomes a connection with somebody that even if you never met them or talked to them directly, they're in your life. And if you don't think that people who really have a love of humanity in their heart, that's why they're doing radio, that they don't have a feeling for the audience, well, you're missing out on it. But you get a guy like Savage, it's a different kind of person. There's different kind of people. Some people are all heart. Some people are all head. Some people neither have a heart nor a head. but they have a good gut. You know, there's different parts of what make us what we are. And I'm not saying Rush Limbaugh is the greatest man that ever lived. And I'm certainly not saying that I agree with any or all or part of what he says. I just think that he's an admirable professional broadcaster who has made enormous contributions to a medium that I love to be a part of and that I think is very important. It's an iconic institution in American life. And because of Rush Limbaugh and what he's done over the last 30-some-odd years, radio still plays a major role in the American way, in among media. If we had to depend upon music radio to do that, you wouldn't have people talking about radio in the national conversation as playing a role in what happens in public policy. So Limbaugh is a very important person to me and to the country, and a champion of free speech. He's the only person that has been the recipient of the Talkers Freedom of Speech Award two times. And, you know, but he's definitely fighting a battle. And I personally, Todd, don't like to count anybody out. That's for God.
And for the person. So he was the one who brought it up.
Right, exactly.
I brought it up.
But
yeah. We've got to run and wrap it up. Michael, thank you, sir. It's another great week sharing this hour. We'll see you again next week.
You got it.
And tomorrow, 2 o'clock with the Michael Harrison Wrap here on WTIC.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.